With the coming of worldwide competition to Walpole Road, the capital of lawn tennis assumed a new importance. But in so doing, its peaceful courts, intended for a leisurely national pastime, became an international battleground on which contenders from all five continents fought grimly for the prize of world supremacy. It is difficult, after nearly 30 years, to recapture the atmosphere of drama that surrounded the coming of Suzanne Longlin in those first days of revived activity at Walpole Road. But I know that to many people who had never before been interested in lawn tennis, as well as to enthusiasts like myself, her appearance in this country will always remain a most exciting memory. For 10 years before the First World War, Mrs. Chambers had reigned supreme among the women players. At the time of Suzanne's arrival, she was the unequalled holder of 7 singles crowns at the All England Club. Until shortly before Suzanne's first visit to Wimbledon, the French girl wonder had not been greatly publicised outside her own country. But it was soon apparent that the rumours that had been heard about her outstanding gifts and her phenomenal ability at tennis had not been overemphasised. Can Suzanne really beat Mrs. Chambers? Our young visitor's sparkling temperament, her revolutionary dresses and the unprecedented grace and style that she'd brought with her to the courts had so impressed the Walpole Road spectators in her early matches that this question was soon the topic of the hour in London, though even then the majority of the connoisseurs still supported Mrs. Chambers' long experience and her well-known tenacity in preference to the French girl's more novel and exuberant ways. Since the inception of the game, the lady champions had always been content to compete for their titles with traditionally corseted waists and with long-sleeved shirts and frilly petticoats included in their attire. Amazingly, Suzanne danced about the court in a loose one-piece garment with arms and legs daringly revealed. The Great War changed many things in women's dress, but none so much in 4 whole years as did the incomparable Longlin in her 2 weeks' rise to fame in England. It was fitting that the first meeting of the game's 2 most arresting personalities should take place in the idyllic setting of the old centre court at Walpole Road. Sensing the importance of the occasion, a record crowd, headed by the King and Queen, sat in an atmosphere of tense anticipation in the opening phases of that great match. Mrs. Chambers failed to clinch her early lead, and good fortune swayed the first set in favour of Suzanne. Could daring innovation possibly supplant tradition? It was close on 2 hours before we knew the final answer, but many of the 7,000 tightly packed spectators must soon have realised that the match they watched would be a turning point in the evolution of women's sport. The preliminaries over, a bitter struggle ensued between the champion and her young challenger. From a cloudless sky, the sun shone down relentlessly on the players, and both were near exhaustion when, having temporarily lost her earlier advantage, Suzanne obtained a commanding lead in the deciding set. 4-1. The old regime seemed seriously in danger when the umpire announced this score in Suzanne's favour. But with proverbial tenacity, Mrs. Chambers staged a comeback, and to such effect that her advance took her to within a single point of victory. 1-all, 6-5, 40-15 to Mrs. Chambers. The atmosphere was electric, as at last Great Britain prepared to deliver the coup de grâce to France's hopes. To many, it was reassuring that in spite of the earlier alarms, the old familiar ways had proved the best. But in that breathless moment, fate also took a hand. By some desperate chance, Suzanne scrambled from a losing position on the court to reach Mrs. Chambers' winning shot. Worst of all, her effort spent, it was soon the unequalled champion whose long reign came to a sad but gallant close. The old order had ceded to the new. The past could not prevent the coming of the future. Thinking back, I remember that many wistful faces could be found amid the scenes of wild excitement that greeted Suzanne's triumph. Max de Cugis, the first Frenchman ever to win a British tournament, rushed onto the court and embraced his young compatriot. Afterwards, in the dressing room, Suzanne again defied tradition by receiving her admirers while in her bath. She had enjoyed the fortunes of the brave, but there were many who considered that Mrs. Chambers' wonderful display might well have been rewarded by better luck than had been her fate. The following year, the dethroned champion gave what was perhaps the clearest proof of her indomitable spirit by sweeping through all opposition at Wimbledon to challenge herself for Suzanne's new title. Mrs. Mallory, Miss Ryan, many great names of the tennis world bowed once more to Mrs. Chambers in her courageous effort to redeem her crown. But time could not be checked. In 1920, with a crushing victory over Mrs. Chambers, Suzanne became the undisputed queen of the modern game. And that year, it was the men's events that provided the sensations when first the singles title went outside the British Empire to Big Bill Tilden, who came to Walpole Road from Philadelphia. And then the doubles went to C.S. Garland and Norris Williams, two champions who also hailed from the New World. With the coming of victorious American stars to Wimbledon, it was Australia's turn to be eclipsed. There was no doubt about it now. The early days were dead.